Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Get up in here, get settled in. We are live here on the Boxing Source Radio Show on the MRN Broadcasting Channel. So you could call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, the number is 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on Q. You'll be able to get on live on the show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cohort Truth on Sports. And also, do the, weekly show here, 7:30 PM Eastern time on Blog Talk Radio. Just got a little bit of a late start here. Tried to, get the show on the, through the phone, but that didn't, quite necessarily work. So we're just, doing this through the, direct microphone here. Going to get settled in here with a couple of commercials, and then we will get right into it.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes,
no, I didn't.
Okay, black Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up. I'll wait.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcast Network. Better than diamond ring. That's why we're
here to sing. Jameis Winston is just stupid.
All right, here we're back live on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press 1 key. Get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. There was a commercial for one of our sister shows here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel, which is the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show. We do that on Wednesdays, 8:30 p.m. We also have the Cohort Truth on Sports radio show hosted by the Executioner Matthew Long, p.m., which talks about all the topics in the sports world during the week, so be, make sure that you catch that as well. All right, we get pretty much into it with the boxing talk. We did have a couple of boxing cards over the weekend. as PBC had something on the NBC Sports Network. And we also had on Friday, there was a card on Bounce TV, which was in Orlando, which had a heavyweight fight between Tony Thompson and Malik Scott. So we'll be going over that as well. And then what we're going to do is we're going to review the month of November in the sport of boxing. So you'll be able to get a little bit of a preview of each of the feature fights that are coming up in the next 4 weeks or so. So we're going to get into that. But first off, we're going to, you know, start off with the a card that was in Houston, Texas last night. You had Jermell Charlo against Joaquin Mossin as the main event there. And it was basically a kind of like a hometown fight for one of the twins, the Charlo brothers, as Jermell Charlo recently won the light middleweight belt, or you could call it super welterweight. It was in the 154-pound division. Jermell Charlo won the belt that Cornelius Bundrich carried earlier. And here, Jermell Charlo went up in the ring against Joaquin Mossin in the NRG Arena and pretty much scored a TKO victory over Mossin. Mossin was, you know, was pretty much a I would say a veteran. He's been in the game for a long time, like since 99. But I think this is pretty much, you know, coming up near the end of his rope, as you know, he's lost a good amount of fights here since 2012. I mean, he lost five straight fights between 2012 and 2013, and you know, was still able to get, you know, these type of fights. He did have a draw against Devin Rodriguez last year, but he didn't have another fight after that until his October 31st fight against Jermell Charlo, when he was pretty much overmatched in that fight. So Charlo was able to score this six-round TKO victory, be able to stay undefeated there with the 27 wins and zero losses. Jermell Charlo is one of the top light middleweights in the sport. Some rate him within the top five or so. And this is a fairly deep division, even though you do have Canelo Alvarez going after that middleweight championship that Miguel Cotto has. There's still, you know, Arislandi Lara. You had Demetrius Andrade that recently had a fight. Baines also, who won against Ishae Smith back in September 12th, is in the division. You do have Austin Trout in the division. You got J-Rock Julian Williams in the division. K-9 still out there. Carlos Molina. So you have a good, you know, 10 or 15 fighters out there that are pretty much either valid contenders or active within that division that Jermell Charlo could go up against. Of course, it was raised as far as who Jermell Charlo could fight next, and did raise the point that he, you know, could possibly go up against Julian J-Rock Williams, as you know, J-Rock had his recent victory back in September 22nd against Luciano Coelho. Basically, you know, blew him out one round. And also, J-Rock is another guy who did face Joaquin Mossin back in 2013 and got a decision within a round. So he was able to, you know, so with Charlo being able to knock him out within six, that would that would be a good matchup at 154 for those two young contenders that they have out there. So, so I definitely would like to see Charlo basically go up there against Julian Williams sometime in the future, probably in 2016. So I'd say we should be on the lookout for something like that in the near future. Next up that we had that went over, again, that was the main event on Friday, was a heavyweight fight between Tony Thompson and Malik Scott. Tony Thompson is a regular veteran there. Had over 45 fights. Was within the top 10 in the division, according to some. He's basically a guy who faced like a lot of fighters over the course of his career. He faced Akhurat Pulev. He did fight Vladimir Klitschko back in 2012. Chaz Witherspoon. He fought Klitschko twice. Once in 2008 and once in 2012. Was former Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion. And also had another one of those, alphabet belts there, over the course of his career before going up against Malik Scott. But Malik Scott mainly had dominated most of the fight up until round nine when Thompson was able to, catch him with a good one. So Malik Scott was able to respond to that and score the win against Tony Thompson to stay within the race as far as being one of the major contenders within the heavyweight division. He still needs a little bit of work, probably, to get within the rankings. Tony Thompson was kind of within the top, probably within the top 10 at that point before the fight. Thompson was ranked number 9 within the WBC. But he wasn't necessarily ranked within the top 10 or 15 in any of the other sanctioned bodies. So I guess with this win that Malik Scott has, it might just put him in there within the rankings in the WBC, probably when they come out, maybe sometime this week or maybe next week. So we'll be able to figure that out soon enough. It wasn't I guess you wouldn't necessarily say that it was an active weekend in the sport of boxing as far as actual fights go. So I think that, pretty much they kind of took that last weekend of the month off. And, we're getting into the month of November where we have a good amount of fights going on within the next few weekends. So I think, these fighters and fight fans are pretty much getting in preparation for that. So we're going to, basically get into that here soon. What I'll do here is I'll take a quick break from a few commercials here, and then we'll be able to go over the set of fights that are happening within the month of November. This is the Boxing Source Radio Show live on Blog Talk Radio, powered by MRN Broadcast.
Hey all, this is Matthew Long, the Executioner, here on the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. Now, I know you've heard me talk about the Touch Pro Basketball on my shows before. My boy, Tony Greer, is the inventor of the ball. If you're out there training and playing basketball and you don't have this ball, you're missing out, because it's going to help you improve your hand-eye coordination, your dribbling, and your shooting skills. So go today and get the Touch Pro Basketball at touchproball.com.
Sports radio host, producer, news anchor. a few of many, many more careers that the Connecticut School of Broadcasting can lead you to. Go CSB.com or 1-800-TV-RADIO to schedule your studio tour. With an on-hands approach and instructors being broadcast professionals themselves, you're guaranteed to get a first-class learning experience. Get your career in the broadcasting field started the right way. Sports radio host, producer, news anchor, the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Go CSB.com or 1-800-TV-RADIO to schedule your studio tour.
Executioner here. Now, I'm sure a lot of you listeners are just like me. You like to spend a little time on the internet, sharing video, looking at video, but the problem is you can't stream live if you're playing on Tumblr or YouTube. Well, if you go right now to Giesel.net, you can sign up for your free account and start streaming live and share that with all of your friends. That's Giesel.net, GEALZ.net.
Why haven't you learned anything?
For sports news, updates, and general tomfoolery, head on over to thechtonsports.wordpress.com.
Gotta be careful, though. We don't want it to get too excited and go off in your hair.
All right, here we are back live on the Boxing Source Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right, we're going to get into it with the schedule that we have here in the month of November. We have a good amount of fights, a good amount of notable fights coming up within the sport. Starting off with November 7th, we have a card on HBO Boxing, as we should have the WBO welterweight championship on the line, but it will not necessarily be that, as Timothy Bradley Jr. will be going up against Brandon Rios in Las Vegas. Timothy Bradley did win the WBO regular or interim welterweight championship, as the champion at the time was Floyd Mayweather, but Mayweather decided not to pay off for the sanctioning fees to hold the belt. So they eventually relinquished that title and gave the full championship to Timothy Bradley. He will be taking on Brandon Rios here on November 7th. However, Rios is not, you know, in contention for that championship, as world kid Saddam Ali is the number one contender for it. So they decided to go forward with this fight between Timothy Bradley and Brandon Rios. And later on down the line, Bradley will be defending this championship against Saddam Ali later on. So we will be able to see what happens here with this fight, as a lot of the focus on this fight between Rios and Bradley is with Timothy Bradley's decision to go ahead and change trainers. He changed it to Teddy Atlas here. So he chose to roll with Teddy Atlas instead of his former trainer that he had, which really wasn't a bad trainer that he had. The thing is that, you know, Timothy Bradley was, you know, pretty much fine with Robert Garcia. I mean, he was able to win the light welterweight championships with Robert Garcia. He was able to, you know, get the WBO championships with Robert Garcia, but all of a sudden he, you know, changes things around and just drops Garcia and ends up choosing to roll with Teddy Atlas. Over the course of the past few weeks, since the announcement has been made, a lot of our callers have disagreed with the decision by Timothy Bradley. I think that this is almost a decision from not directly Timothy Bradley, but from his wife, and we will be able to see what the effects of this is going to be come Saturday night in Las Vegas when he goes up against Brandon Rios. Bradley initially should be favored to win the fight. I think he's, you know, more skilled than Brandon Rios. He's, you know, gone up against both fighters have gone up against Ruslan Provodnikov, and I think both scored a win. But I think that, you know, Timothy Bradley has the better skill overall than Brandon Rios does. And I think that, you know, that he should be able to pull off this win against Brandon Rios. While Rios might be a fairly good welterweight. His biggest wins here have been against Mike Alvarado, you know, up to this point. He did score a win against Diego Chavez, but that was, you know, due to a disqualification due to elbow to the face. So I wouldn't necessarily say that Rios is a guy that could, you know, step up to score the win against Timothy Bradley here next week. So to me, I think that Timothy Bradley will be able to score a good decision as long as he doesn't make, you know, any bad decisions in the ring. And I think that, you know, over the past couple of fights or so, that's been his take back, is that he's been making all of these decisions that kind of leave him open to big shots. Once, you know, he did have that fight against the Ruslan Provodnikov, and he also had the fight against Jesse Vargas where he was making those separate decisions there. So with that being the case, that should pretty much carry him over to get the win. Also, in the undercard of this fight, you do have one of the best boxers out there in the sport, and that's Vasyl Lomachenko, who has one of the most decorated amateur careers out there in the sport of boxing. He will be defending his WBO featherweight championship against Romulo Kosiga. Or Kosiga, how would we be able to pronounce it? I do not know, but it's another chance for boxing fans to be able to see Lomachenko in action. The last fight that people were able to see him in was within that card on May 2nd, with the main event being Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao. So now you have Lomachenko here in this next fight, defending his WBO featherweight championship. Should be a fairly easy fight for Lomachenko. I think that, you know, he's probably one of the best, guys out there within the sport. While Kosiga is kind of like rated within the top 25 or 30 within that division. He's not nearly, you know, as good as Lomachenko is, and Lomachenko is just, you know, out here pretty much taking this as a stay busy fight. As like I said, this fight was successful, and I mean, this is a guy who's faced the likes of Gary Russell Jr. and, you know, fought for the and won the featherweight championship back in 2014 against a guy that had 53 fights, 53 professional fights under his belt, and Lomachenko was basically able to shut him out over 12 rounds. So you know how good Lomachenko is there. But the main thing, though, is that a lot of people really want to see Lomachenko against the likes of the best within that particular division. I mean, he did fight and beat Gary Russell Jr. Gary Russell Jr. is still rated highly within that division. You do have Leo Santa Cruz in there. You do have also the X-Men, Nicholas Walters, in there too. So I mean, maybe there may be a possibility that you may see Lomachenko go up against Nicholas Walters sometime next year within the featherweight division. Because the most talked about could happen is Lomachenko against Kiyama Rigondeaux. But those talks have, you know, been shot down over the past month or so. So we're not going to be able to see that here within the near future. So so here we're seeing Lomachenko in a stay busy fight, defending his championship here on November 7th. So we do have that going on here. So that should pretty much, you know, cover what's going on next Saturday in Las Vegas, as, you know, we do have, like I said, Loma defending his WBO belt. And you do have Bradley going up against Brandon Rios. And this is going to be in the Thomas Mack Center there in the UNLV campus in Las Vegas. So we'll be at MGM Grand pretty much about a few miles away from the strip. So, but, you know, it'll still be, you know, a pretty good pretty good stat card that they have there in Las Vegas. So we'll be able to check that out. All right, moving on here to that next week that's going on. As I mentioned, Lomachenko was able to score a win against Gary Russell Jr. for the vacated WBO featherweight championship. But Gary Russell was able to move on and win the WBC featherweight championship earlier this year in March over Johnny Gonzalez. And on the 14th, he'll be fighting at the Hard Rock against Oscar Escandon and defending that WBC championship there on November 14th. So you do have Gary Russell Jr. Who pretty much turned around and scored a victory to win another belt within the featherweight division. So you'll be able to see him on Showtime in action, going up against Oscar Escandon for the featherweight championship. And they also have Brian Severn coming back after his defeat to Deontay Wilder earlier this year, where he lost the WBC Heavyweight Championship. So he'll be coming back in a 10-round fight against Derek Rossi there. So so that card on Showtime, you will be able to see Gary Russell Jr. fighting, but also Ramon Stiverne coming back after, I guess, a fairly long layoff after that fight against Deontay Wilder. So looks like that kind of is a little, you know, break in between seeing the notable fights from, you know, with Timothy Bradley going up against Brandon Rios, Lomachenko also fighting in. Also at another location there on November 7th, Ruslan Provodnikov will be able to return at the junior welterweight division, and that will be in Monte Carlo. So you'll be able to check that out on November 7th. And then on November 14th, you do have Gary Russell Jr. defending the WBC Featherweight Championship. You do have, you know, a few fight cards, you know, in between November 7th, November 14th, and November 21st. But come November 21st, the Mandalay Bay Event Center will be, you know, the big HBO pay-per-view, where you do have Miguel Cotto going up against Canelo Alvarez for the WBC Middleweight Championship that, you know, a lot of people have talked about since the announcement was official. And now the card has been pretty much upgraded a little bit, as, you know, we had the recent announcement that Andre Ward was in a three-fight agreement with HBO to fight on HBO cards, with the third fight being up against Sergey Kovalev, who is the unified light heavyweight champion. So Ward has three fights going up on HBO, with an eventual fight against Sergey Kovalev at for a light heavyweight championship. And so now we'll be able to see Andre Ward on this fight card with Cotto Canelo as the main event. And he will be in a 10-rounder against Alexander Brand. Pretty much been there. At least, you know, Andre Ward is going to be active and fighting, as, you know, we did have a fight earlier this year against Paul Smith, where he ended a near, you know, 18-month layoff or, you know, more, as, you know, he was going through a back-and-forth spat between Goose and Tudor Promotions and the other promotional company that he was with, you know, since the beginning of his career. So, I mean, a lot of people didn't know that one of the problems with the major hang-up that Andre Ward had was because he was not just with one promotional company, he was with two. And so, we did have the issue on, going on between Andre Ward and Dan Goosen, even with, you know, the passing of elite men there in the promotional company. Andre Ward still was having issues trying to get out of contract, so he was able to finally move on and sign with Roc Nation Sports. Did get a fight against Paul Smith on BET earlier this year, back in June 20th, and now he comes back 5 months later, going up against Alexander Brand, and that will be in the Mandalay Bay Event Center there as the co-feature to the main event for Cotto Canelo. So you do have Alexander Brand, who was basically in the super middleweight division, but is moving up to moving up to fight Andre Ward here on November 21st. Basically, this is a stay busy fight for Andre Ward. He didn't necessarily have anybody else out there to fight, really, in the light heavyweight division. And I think that a lot of people that had issues with Andre Ward here moving up and getting a fight with Alexander Brand is that they're like, well, you mean to tell me that you couldn't really fight anybody else in the light heavyweight division? Well, here's the issue here. The issue is that whether it's from promotional differences with Roc Nation and Al Heyman's management group and the team that promotes fights under Al Heyman, a lot of these other contenders pretty much had fights over the past few weeks, either in the previous few weeks or the weeks upcoming. I mean, you had top guys like Eleider Alvarez. You had guys like, Andre Fonfara. You had other contenders such as, who else here was a top contender. Yeah, Jürgen Brammer, probably. Artur Beterbiev is under the management company with Al Heyman. Chilemba pretty much has a fight. Pascal probably would have been a contender, but I think that one is kind of like for the near future. So we might be able to see Ward go up against Pascal before he goes up against the light heavyweight champion, Sergey Kovalev. So we'll be able to see. We'll be able to see Ward in action after 5 months here. Right now we have live calling in 813-758. What's going on with you?
What up, JBZ? This is Rail from Tampa, Florida. Calling in. What's going on? I just caught the end of your conversation. Isn't Pascal supposed to get re-signed to fight Kovalev again because of lack of options for both people?
Well, I was thinking that also, but it seemed like at first Kovalev had something signed for November 28th. That was supposed to be in Russia, but it seemed like that kind of got shut down because the possibility was Kovalev fighting Beterbiev in Russia. But that isn't going to happen. But now what I'm seeing here is, for the time being, there will be a rematch between John Pascal and Kovalev.
Yeah, and actually what's kind of disappointed me, the Kovalev Beterbiev fight, I was actually looking forward to that, because I actually have a good friend of mine, a coworker. He's from Moscow, and he gave some insight. The region that Beterbiev is from, I think South Russia or whatever it's called, whatever, Ukraine, whatever it is,
yeah.
He said they're known for having rough training methods for fighters to develop toughness, strength, and endurance. And that would have been that really would have been a great fight. I think Beterbiev's record is only like 17-0 or something like that. But nonetheless, that would have been a good regional fight, you know.
Yeah,
but,
it would have been a great regional fight. And I think that the main hang-up was that Yvonne Michel, who promotes Beterbiev and Stevenson, kind of said, like, well, I mean, we could either try to fight Kovalev now. That would pretty much be under the terms of Duva, or pretty much force a purse bid. See, what Michelle didn't want is for Duva and HBO to control the terms. He wanted it to be in a purse bid so that Duva could get outbid. So what he was going to do was he was going to have Beterbiev fight in a number one contenders matchup and win that, and then eventually, fight as IBF number one contender and go for a purse bid. But as of this current juncture, Beterbiev is injured, so we won't be able to see him in action, this year. So that has to be postponed. reference to Kovalev, actually, it seems like they have something signed, that rematch with Pascal. It seems like they do have that signed. It's planned for a January 30th back at the Bell Center once again. So we'll have the second fight between Kovalev and Pascal. Seems like January 30th back at the Bell Center in Montreal.
Yeah, and what's funny, actually, Kovalev virtually dominated. I'm not going to say totally dominated Pascal. It was competitive for the good first four or five rounds. I forgot what round he got him out of there, but it was a competitive fight for as long as it lasted. But at the same time, on that fight, you could just clearly see it's only a matter of time before he gets him out of there, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Hopefully Pascal, and to me, I love Pascal. I'm glad to see his accomplishments and stuff like that. But to me, at best, he's a B-plus fighter. Lack of endurance. And
yeah.
And not only that, but lack of boxing, what do I want to say, mental prowess. That,
right.
That toughness, that grit that you need to be able to hang in there, and that extra grit to be able to outsmart another opponent. To me, he doesn't have that naturally, you know, like some of your great fighters that on that B level. Even like for example, I think one of your greatest grit fighters would be Roy Jones Jr., Pernell Whitaker, especially Sweet Pea, because he didn't have the natural strength and size and stuff like that, but he had that boxing smartness, you know, that
yeah.
that people forget about, you know. And I'm sorry, I'm a brother, but a lot of brothers got that naturally. Not all of them, but a lot of brothers got that, and Sweet Pea definitely had that in spades. But Pascal lacks that to me, you know.
Yeah, and what's funny about it is that, I mean, the chief second for Pascal is Roy Jones, and he kind of like got a little bit involved in that fight against Sergey Kovalev while the main trainer was trying to, you know, give him instructions and whatnot. It seemed like Roy Jones was trying to, you know, add in, but it seemed like he was almost overbearing in comparison to the trainer. So I think that kind of, you know, hurt Pascal in that fight against Kovalev. And, you know, eventually Pascal just couldn't stand the ongoing pressure that Kovalev was giving to him. But what you think about, you know, Ward, you know, being able to be added on to the November 21st card?
Great. Well, I'm excited about that, and really one main reason why I'm excited about that is because we all know that Ward's been ranked as the new pound for pound on certain lists. But that's great, that's fine and dandy, but prove it. And I think that the general boxing world is hungry for someone to not only be named to the list, but earn that and earn and command that respect that the number one pound for pound typically has associated with that ranking, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to bigger and better things, you know, from Ward. Earn it, like I said, earn it.
Yep. And I think that, you know, right now, I mean, he's just, you know, kind of, you know, basically getting his feet wet. And like I said, he nearly had that, you know, 18 months or so layoff before he fought Paul Smith earlier this year in June. And now he was able to, you know, get back in the ring after 5 months, which is a good sign for him. And, you know, with him signing that three-fight deal, that basically guarantees that he has at least two fights next year. It's not like, you know, he's going to be sitting out there in the pasture waiting on, you know, people to fight him. I mean, he's basically going to have that guarantee regardless of who's available and who's not. But also, it's like we do have that, you know, the big fight coming up on November 21st, too. So, like I said, we've gone up and down through that fight many times over. I don't think there's really much to update on. I think that the weights are what was it, that 30-day week?
Right.
We were talking about, I think that Canelo was at, what, 167 or something like that?
Right.
167.5. Uh-huh. And so, you know, he's still trying to put in work to, you know, get down to the 160-pound limit there for this fight against Miguel Cotto.
And that's at a catchweight, right? What's the catchweight?
Let me see.
56?
I thought it was 156. Maybe 156. But I thought it was 155. Let me see. It's 155. 155. So, yeah, Canelo has to be at 155 by November 20th on his site.
And I'm sure we all know Cotto's already there, right? Pretty much.
Well, he might be already there or something like that, but it's, you know, it's not like it's something that he can't get to. I mean, he's done that over the past two fights, you know. I mean, he did it against Angulo. He did it against Lauren. He was just a tad below it against Kirkland. So it's nothing that's, you know, that's not different from any other routine that he's done over the past year or so.
What do you think Cotto walks around at?
Good question. I don't think he walks any higher than 156. Maybe 157, maybe, but not anything above that. I don't think he walks out around 160 or so. I think he kind of, you know, he keeps himself in shape, so to speak. So he kind of like has like about a four or five pound barometer that he keeps himself at. So he doesn't necessarily, you know, spend that much time in training trying to get his weight down. I mean, his weight is pretty much at the weight, at the area that he wants it to be at. So he kind of like gets it to, you know, about 156 or 157.
Yeah, I'm, like you said, you pretty much spot on with that. He probably walks around no more than 65 or something like that, because, you know, with it, with his body structure, we already know it's not built to carry a lot of weight naturally,
right.
And you know he's not gonna pick up a lot of weight like that anyways. Just doesn't seem like that type of person.
Right.
Like, for in contrast, for example, Marcos Maidana, who I read an article just the other day that he's pretty much, he says he's not even thinking about boxing. And to think that a welterweight balloons up to 200 pounds is kind of like, what? But then, like stuff that we talked about before, like people like Ricky Hatton, albeit he's not in the sport no more, has gained that type of weight. And he's only, what, comes in at 5'5", 5'6"?
Yeah,
and walks around like I reported. Yeah.
But
like I said, Cotto, yeah, probably walks around 165. So with that said, he's really maintained his strength throughout training camp. You know, he's not losing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So I think that, you know, that'll be something that'll be kind of a little bit towards his that he can use as a positive going up against Canelo here, is that he doesn't necessarily have to worry about cutting down his weight for the 4 months in the training towards his fight against Alvarez. You know, they did have, I did speak earlier on the fight that's coming up next Saturday, or this coming Saturday, in Las Vegas, at the at the Thomas Mack Center, between Timothy Bradley and Brandon Rios. You know, I did touch on the whole decision on Bradley using Teddy Atlas as his trainer, you know, instead of Robert Garcia, and if that will possibly affect him in this matchup against Rios. I don't think it'll affect him against this matchup against Rios because I don't think that Rios is a guy that's, you know, good enough to give Bradley any issues. I think Bradley, with his talents alone, should be able to beat Rios regardless of who his trainer is.
Well, I think that's an excellent summation on that. I full well expect this to go 12 rounds because Rios does have that grit that we kind of spoke about earlier, the toughness, and even that boxing acumen that he has. He has that, you know. But this ain't going to be nothing new. Like we said, we talked about this before. We pretty much going to see the same Timothy Bradley. And I don't think that – put it like this, I think Rios' only chance is to hurt Bradley late. And we have seen lately that Bradley has been hurt late in within a fight. So, aside from that, this is going to be pretty much a rock'em sock'em fight at times because you already know Rios is going to want to mix it up and stay inside. While Bradley does have that tendency to same thing, rock'em sock'em, cause a fight instead of boxing, his corner's going to urge him on. And I mean, it's going to be interesting for a degree – to the degree because he does have a new trainer, and not only that, a well-established trainer, although we haven't seen him on Teddy Atlas on this level with a boxer on this level with so much online in a while, we do know that calling a fight is totally different from being right there in the corner. So he's going to make it's going to be interesting to see that just from him because, you know, typically with fights after the round ends, you already know, majority of the fight, they will be in Bradley's corner to see what Atlas is saying and how he's advising, you know. So it's going to be very interesting at that point, too.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a bit, you know, a big focus there is, you know, how Rios and his team is going to be able to counter what, you know, Teddy Atlas and Timothy Bradley are going to do in his part. And, you know, one of the other things that was kind of notable on reference to Timothy Bradley and his recent addition to Teddy Atlas is that he did have a comment to where he said, well, that, you know, he was able to learn more with Teddy Atlas in his 3 weeks or so that he's learned over the past 10 years, which I kind of find that hard to believe.
Yeah, ludicrous.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's something that's kind of a jab at Robert Garcia to me, because I think that Garcia is probably one of the best trainers out there in the sport right now. You know?
Well, Bradley's not a Robert Garcia disciple. He's what's the other guy that he was under all the time?
I'm trying to figure out who it was, because he had somebody, yeah, he did have somebody before that, but I kind of forgot who it was, you know, when before he added it. Because I think he had somebody, when he was coming up with his previous promoter, before he was on with Robert Garcia. So, just kind of forgot who that was.
Yeah, basically, guy had been with him since the beginning, along with his father as co-trainer. But bottom line, like we said before, it's going to be interesting. First of all, we already know
Diaz. It's not Garcia, but it's Diaz, Joel Diaz.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's where he at.
Uh-huh.
You know. So, I mean, it was kind of a questionable decision for him to leave Joel Diaz and then just go ahead and be with Teddy Atlas.
Yeah, and they haven't released all the details, but, I mean, the one statement Bradley said about it, he needs someone that's going to be committed to his purpose and career. And what that sounds like to me is, like, basically Diaz has some stuff going on outside of the purpose of being Bradley's primary trainer that probably kept getting in the way of him, of his availability, being a witness fighter. And I can kind of understand that in a sense. He probably got some business interests that he's helped develop that probably – plus, without Bradley, Diaz would be another boxing trainer in a local town. And I know that, and you know that, you know. So with that said, I'm sure they were like family. And when Bradley saw that Diaz probably had other interests taken away from his side, he's like, "Hey man, what's going on? You're not here anymore." "Oh well, yeah, you know, I'm gonna be there. And Bradley probably got tired of it, and then from that point made the decision to change trainers. So, and like I said, that the statement that he made, that he's learned more now than the last 10 years. Yeah, please, so that guy's been there with you through war. So don't run under the bus like that."
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he kind of like, you know, he sided with Diaz sided with Bradley, I think, against when he was going up against Provodnikov, because I mean, now, you know, Diaz has, you know, Ruslan, he trained Ruslan, he trained Abner Juarez, Diego De La Hoya, Omar Figueroa Jr. Those are guys that, you know, Joe Diaz is pretty much trained. And for somebody like, you know, Timothy Bradley to just straight up dismiss her, then that, you know, that pretty much says a lot with in reference to Timothy Bradley there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to see if I could, with probably a couple more things on the upcoming fights in the month of November. We do have Super Middleweight Championship on the line also on the same day on November 21st. You got Arthur Abraham against Martin Murray for the WBO Super Middleweight Championship. Thing with Arthur Abraham is that, you know, they said if he wins that fight, he may possibly go up against Bernard Hopkins sometime next year. As Bernard Hopkins has said over the past several months, that the only championship that he hasn't been able to get over his career is Super Middleweight Championship, as he kind of like completely skipped that division on his way up to light heavyweight. So Abraham going up against Murray, which probably would be a pretty good fight, but I don't know if Arthur Abraham will be one to win this one. I think that he's gone through a lot of wars himself, over the course of his career. And I think that Martin Murray is somebody that, even though he's probably moving up in this case, he probably may have a good shot to Super Middleweight Championship away from Arthur Abraham.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, because we all know that at middleweight, Martin Murray was big for the weight class. And moving up, that's a natural move for him to move up. I'm sure he'll fit right into that class. And like you said, Abraham's been in countless wars, dating back even to the Super Six and some before that, when he had actually held the middleweight title for a while before that Super Six tournament. But the thing about him, one thing I just want to make a comment about, how many fighters out there are still using that peekaboo style, like Abraham continues to do that, you know? I can't think of another fighter out there that uses that style, you know? But he's made that a living for him. He's paid for it at times. I recall one fight he got his nose broken. I forgot who the opponent was, but he still continues to employ that peekaboo style, takes punishment for the first 3 or 4 rounds, fires back some, stuff like that. He rarely throws a jab, but nevertheless, he's made that peekaboo style work for him. But like I said, Martin Murray, I'm sure he's going to be hungry coming in to take that title. So that's going to be an interesting fight as well. But you said it was proposed for Hopkins to get in with Abraham, possibly, you said?
Yeah, that was a possibility that he would fight, Hopkins would fight Arthur Abraham. Mainly because of the whole, you know, that whole little promotional thing and whatnot. The other two title holders, Segale and Badu Jack, are still under PBC, so you wouldn't necessarily see Hopkins go up against either one of those two fighters. So, I mean, all you have pretty much left is, Arthur Abraham right now.
You know, what's funny, man, is how I'm not even calling it laughable, but Hopkins is staying relevant. And, well, let me say this. I'm going to compare these two, because they're from the same era. And I know it's a, I won't say it's a mockery of boxing, but
look at how Roy Jones is still fighting. He's going to fight, I believe, a Russian for some title, and he's clearly fighting off his name and staying relevant because of his name. Now, Hopkins, we know, got the story against Kovalev, I believe, his last fight. And from that fight, everyone had said the same thing. Call it quits, man. That's it. When you can't come out, you can't even be competitive. Now, I know Kovalev's a monster. We know that. But, I mean, that was one of the most that was one of the most worst performances I've ever seen in a boxing match by someone. And it's a shame because Hopkins has that legacy, that name, that respect that he commands. And for him to go out and get destroyed like that, everybody's like, wow, this is an old dude in here, you know.
Yeah, but exactly. And, I mean, I was pretty much there, like, ringside, man. Now, you know, I mean, he was just pretty much getting thrown around the ring or something like that. He would, you know, he had to have the hands to pretty much do whatever he wanted to do in the ring, and that's what he was able to do. You know, so that was basically a mismatch. So the only other thing that Bernard Hopkins can really do now is just, you know, try to do something at super middleweight, have one fight in there, and just ride on out.
But kind of like with Roy Jones, because of that name, same thing with Hopkins. He can actually go overseas and fight and get an Abraham-type fight, you know.
Yeah.
Because they'll pay money for that. They'll pay money just because of that name. Even, what's the guy, I don't know the champion's name, but the guy that Shane Mosley was getting ready to fight because he had called Mosley out, even though the fight didn't happen because they lowballed him on the offer. But once again, they called out, they called these established American names to get him to come back overseas and fight to get a payday, you know, or to even just to make a name off of.
Yeah, that one was like for a, I don't know if it was for a super, what was it, for like one of those super super welterweight belts or something like that, maybe.
Right, because, you know, we live in the days of multiple champions in one weight class, which is crazy.
So I think that one was for like one of those many minor belts or something like that. I think it was Liam Smith. Yeah, I think that's who it was. I think it was Liam Smith. Maybe he got the WBO belt, and he was going to see if he could call out Shane Mosley. I think that's who it was. I think it was Liam Smith that called him out on Twitter or something like that, and seeing if he could challenge Shane Mosley back at Manchester, England, for the WBO Super Welterweight Championship. That's the belt that he has. He just won it though. So I'm like, well, it's like maybe he just wanted to have send Shane Mosley over there to England to, you know, get in a fight with Liam Smith. So yeah, it's something where when a lot of these guys try to, you know, get something where they kind of bring those name fighters out there and see if they can beat them just to say that they beat them.
Yeah, and actually, because Mosley in the article stated that he thought that he should get at least $1 million offer, and they came way under that. And that's why he turned it down. He's like, you know, this guy's trying to fight off my name and promote off my name. But I understand that, even at the States for Mosley. But it's funny, man, just and looking at that, because we all thought Mosley was retired. And he actually sat out retired until he took that Mayorga fight this year, which is whatever, you know. But at the same time, now, look, he's almost entertained doing another fight. So are you truly retired? And if you're not, will you be yet another Roy Jones Jr. and Hopkins? I think Moses is like only 40, 41, but I'm sure he's still in good shape, you know. But we know he's not at the top level. We know that. I would give him B level at best at this point. But, I don't know, just funny, man. These guys, they duck out and come back in, you know.
I don't even know if I would put him at B level right now. I mean, if I could look at, you know, some of the, you know, guys that are either within the welterweight division or the super welterweight division, you know, that's out there right now, I mean, Mosley is almost 45 years old. Yeah, he's almost 45. Yeah, he turned 44 this year, so. Yeah, I don't think he would be competitive against a lot of the guys that are in the weight classes that, you know, he used to be in. I mean, so, I mean, that's bad because you got the welterweight division and then the super welterweight division and then middleweight division. So, he wouldn't be competitive in any one of those classes right now.
No. No. He'd be solid for like 4 or 5 rounds tops, and then he'd get ate up. He'd get ate up, you know?
Yeah. All right, cool. So, all right, so now you're moving on to that next week, going into November 28th. And, you know, last weekend of November, Thanksgiving weekend, you know, basically, the heavyweight championship fight between Klitschko and Fury. That'll be on HBO. On Showtime, they're going to have James Gill defending his super middleweight championship.
Hey, Jay, I don't know what's going on. Your voice is very, very choppy.
Finally have Klitschko Fury. What was that?
So I'm not sure what's going on, but your voice has been very choppy.
I think it's because it's on the microphone this time around. It's not like on the cell phone.
Okay. Well, those fights that you mentioned, for one, even the James DeGale fight, I'm very interested in that fight for me personally because he took the title from Durrell, I believe it was. And Durrell is from Michigan. I'm from Michigan, so I care about that fighter in that regard. But I want to see how he continues to go forward from that fight in his first defense. I just want to, because I thought Durrell would win that fight with him back in him and DeGale fight. That didn't happen. Once again with Durrell, he lacks some of that grit and that fortitude. Same thing like when he fought in the Super Six tournament. I remember when he fought Abraham. I know Abraham, I think he hit him when he was down or something like that. And kind of his reaction to the whole thing was kind of like, I don't want to say bitch, but I'm going to say bitch. You know, get your ass up. You know, he ain't hurt that bad.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So I want to see how DeGale reacts going forward in this next fight, in his first defense. You know, can he be a true champion? There was a fight last week. I'm trying to think of this British kid's name. He fought an American named Jeter. Do you recall what that fight was? That's a British kid. Let me locate that.
I don't know. Let me see if it was a Jeter. Maybe I kind of like heard it somewhere, but not necessarily.
Oh, Chris Eubank, that's his name.
Chris Eubank Jr. Oh yeah, yeah, against Tony Jeter. Yeah. Yeah, that's middleweight.
Yeah, but anyways, there's a lot of hype to that fight, a lot of trash talk and stuff like that, and he got him out of there. But it's just so interesting to see fighters, not just American fighters, but just fighters everywhere. I'm glad we talk about other fighters instead of just the typical names and stuff like the Cotto's and Mayweather's and stuff like that. But, I mean, I like boxing everywhere, you know. It's
right.
Interesting. But it's just good to see how these guys move forward in their fights, you know, like the DeGale fight. And we already talked about the Klitschko fight coming up. And I think people on the show have already said we want Klitschko to shut this guy up and shut him up good. And I want a knockout, especially for these guys, these size. And we already know what Klitschko going to do. He's going to be methodical, going to push that jab right down the middle, which is like a piston-like jab, and we'll see what happens. You know, I want to see Fury on the ground.
I think it's just, you know, how Fury is going to attempt to come into this fight because, I mean, there's been fights when, you know, Fury has been in shape, you know, real focused and, you know, on point with his punches and his movements. And then there's been other fights where he's been out of shape, looking real big and real sloppy. So, you know, up to this point, you know, he seemed like he's been really focused and, you know, really bent on, you know, beating Klitschko. So, you know, it seems like he's coming in there to really fight. So, I mean, mean, this might be hopefully it's going to be one of the best heavyweight fights that we've seen in a while. That's what I'm looking towards, because we haven't necessarily had one of those in years.
Are you serious? We just had a Tony Tucker.
Oh, you mean Tony Thompson?
Tony Thompson.
Now, that
was a great fight.
Actually, I've been like out, so I kind of like missed most of that fight. You know.
Well,
I am
joking. Let me say, I'm joking.
But I'm like, because I kind of like reviewed it, and I was like, well. I mean, Malik Scott seemed to, like, basically shut out Thompson until Thompson was able to score that knockdown on the ninth round. But other than that, he really couldn't do much at all. So,
well, I love Scott back when he fought Wilder and laid down for his buddy. I love respect for him for that.
Yeah, he did. So, I was like, you can't really, you know, necessarily try to give much validity to him if he ends up laying down for, you know, somebody in a fight. So that was my issue with Scott, you know, back then was I'm like, you just go down in one round to a contender like that? Nah.
Yeah.
And now he's considered to be amongst the top 10 rated guys out there? Nah, I can't buy that.
Nope.
You know, so, he's able to score this win against Thompson, but, I mean, how significant is that over the overall scope of things if, you know, he's the same guy that laid down against Deontay Wilder? What about these other fights that are here like that? Charlo's just, you know, defending his title here November 28th just to stay busy. But Errol Spence is getting in a fight here in his hometown against Alejandro Barrera. So we do have that. And then, you know, I'll get into the, you know, into an update with Thurman and Porter. I'll get an update with that.
Okay. And not to go off topic real quick, have you spoken on the reorganization of HBO at all?
No, I haven't. That shocked me. That shocked me, actually. That announcement about Kent Hirschman. That actually shocked me, though.
Yeah, I would love to be a fly on the wall in some meetings that led up to that, you know, being that Hirschman came from Showtime and came over to HBO, which is crazy. And now all of a sudden, I think they said 4 years to the day, he's pretty much getting out of there, be out of there by the end of the year. And like, I think like we spoke about on social media, it's like, wow, what's going to happen to HBO? And like, is this the actual decline of HBO? Particularly with the advent of the PBC going forward, you know, how do you see that happening? And how does that affect the landscape of boxing?
I mean, it's only what it says is that there really isn't that much left. I mean, we talked about it over the past few weeks or so that, I mean, when you only have guys like, you know, Vladimir Klitschko and Canelo Alvarez and or Miguel Cotto, and you do have you do have Andre Ward, but as far as like a major player in the boxing aspect of things, I don't see HBO as being one of them. I just don't. I think that the overall aspect of boxing being on premium networks is kind of like phasing out. I think there's just going to be, you know, some shows here and there, but it's not going to be as big as it used to be. Like, I mean, when you have fights like, let's say, for example, that Garcia-Peterson fight. A Garcia-Peterson fight 2 years ago would either be on HBO, Showtime, or on a pay-per-view. But now, it's on NBC, you know. Going into, you know, the next topic that I was going to say is, like I said, Thurman and Porter. Thurman Porter is at the very least a Showtime level fight. But it's going to be on network television now. So with all of that stuff going on, you know, bringing all of these fights to network television or ESPN and stuff like that, that just takes the whole fighting aspect of boxing out of the premium networks now. So it's like, what else can they do?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And one thing that comes up for me is, like, with the decentralization of boxing, with HBO not being as a top dog anymore, for example, your boy, one of HBO's main pundits, Jim Lampley, has his own show, right, for boxing.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, once or twice a month, whatever it is. The past couple of years, past few years, actually, one of his main points on the show was criticizing Heyman for not putting on great fights at the time and everything.
Yeah, that was last year. Yeah. He said that at the end of last year.
And what's interesting, because HBO is still HBO. They still have a budget. They still have a big budget. But at the same time, they have a budget, but who's going to fight on that? And like I said, they're going to have a good fights here and there, good three or four fights. We know that because they got certain people that are aligned with them and everything. But at the same time, there's only so many good fights that they can put on. Because like I said, with the decentralization of boxing going to network TV, it doesn't matter anymore for HBO, you know. And so who's left he going to talk about now? Is he going to talk about his own network, not putting on good fights? And also, like with the Triple G fight, this last one with Lemieux,
right.
they're trying to make a new pay per view star. Well, that fight didn't do. The hardcore people, we knew that was going to do great, and they saw that for themselves when they saw the final numbers. You know, so who can they make out of thin air? You know, who can they get behind? And that's what they've typically done, but the way it's set up now, they can put on good 3-4 fights a year. That's it.
The thing is that the HBO has pretty much been behind the guys that have pretty much promoted the sport of boxing for many years now, and that basically ties or points to Bob Arum right now. So when Bob Arum was there, I mean, you know, you still had all of the fights that you did have. You did have your Oscar De La Hoya's come up through that. You did have, you know, Floyd Mayweather come up through that, Shane Mosley, and so on and so forth. And then eventually those guys broke away from him. But now, with Mayweather breaking away from him and getting that six-fight deal with Showtime, that kind of, like, built the thing with Showtime, one, and it built Al Heyman. Because if you think about it, Floyd Mayweather, Al Heyman's investment to Floyd Mayweather back after that fight he had with Zab Judah basically turned around and got him all of those fighters and ended up getting this PBC started up. And now look where Al Heyman is. He's pretty much at the top of the sport.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know, so now it's like HBO has to adjust to that because they don't have, it's not like they could do any other sport or cover any other sport on there. They do have, you know, your series with Real Sports and they do have Hard Knocks and other type of specials out there. But other than that, I mean, they can only roll with boxing as a sport that they can showcase. And when you don't have fighters that, you know, people can follow, other than a Canelo or a Cotto, as long as he's going to be able to be in the sport, or, you know, Golovkin, then You have to find, you have to do something else or find somebody else. And who is that person going to be? It's going to be Vasyl Lomachenko. Lomachenko isn't, you know, he isn't at a division that garners the most interest from boxing fans. Roman Gonzalez is not a fighter that garners a lot of interest from boxing fans and those outside of boxing that may want to be interested in watching. That just, it just can't happen for him with those type of fighters. So who can they, you know, who can they put themselves behind now? They don't have anybody else. And I don't think, and like I was saying last week, I don't think that Terrence Crawford is the guy that they're going to put themselves behind because they've never done it before. You know, I don't see him doing it now.
And that would be a shame for them if they don't get behind this guy because, you know, you got all the talent in the world and the skills. Got good, solid personality, but just going back to a point I made before, I'm sure this, you know, this is, at this point, this is the last quarter of this year. And, you know, from the HBO side, I'm sure they've had their meetings in regards to playing out each quarter of next year as far as what fights to put on, who to get behind. And you know for a fact they probably got a drawing board, put names up there, and a projected career path of certain people and the popularity and gain that certain fighters could garner is probably they're like coming up with nothing.
Right.
You know, this guy, yeah, I mean, he's only right here.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I mean, as far as I know right now, they do have an HBO card on, you know, January 30th with Kovalev versus Pascal. And, you know, you do have something with Andre Ward coming up, too. And maybe they'll, you know, see if they could find something with Gennady Golovkin. April 9th will probably be, you know, one pay-per-view with Manny Pacquiao, but... You know, otherwise, I just don't see anything else that they could put themselves under past Ward, Kovalev, and maybe Pacquiao. And that Pacquiao fight is going to be one fight, and that's it.
Do you think that'll be pay-per-view?
I think it will be pay-per-view. You know, even with the amount of money that Pacquiao and his team was able to garner in this in the May 2nd fight, I think that, you know, they'll make this final fight a pay-per-view fight.
And despite the fact that would be his last fight, I think they need to load that undercard with at least two other championship fights, at least, you know.
If and this is what I would want. I would want, instead of Pacquiao facing Crawford on April 9th, I would like to see on the undercard on April 9th, Terrence Crawford, you know, against Victor Postol for a unified 140-pound championship. Right now, that would be the best fighting one at that weight class.
I definitely strongly agree with that. Crawford in Postol's post-fight stated that he expected him to do that to what's the guy's name that he took the belt from? Matisse. He says he expected that. I personally have enough knowledge about Postol to know what he would do. I mean, I projected and stuff like that, and he did what he did, and so he's out there now. But Crawford, Postol, that's a great fight. That's a great fight because it's just a great fight. I don't need to give a whole lot of analysis on that. It's just been a great fight. You know.
Yeah, they're the two best guys at 140 right now, and so it would only be fitting to, you know, just have those two people go at it. You know, but you know, in a lot of cases, you know, a lot of these promoters don't do things to make sense; they just do things to make money. So with something in the case of, you know, Crawford Postol, I'll just believe it when I see it in that one. All right. Here on the last little topic here for the show is the you know, the update for the news on Keith Thurman and Sean Porter. is that they have reports out there that they've signed for this fight to happen on January 23rd instead of having it in December, you know, on December 12th, where kind of like the plans were to have it December 12th in San Antonio, but that wasn't going to be the case. So I think that they're pushing it back to try to increase demand for the fight and to have it on to be the first fight in January as January 23rd. I mean, me personally, I don't think that there's much else that you could do, you know, to build this fight up when they're basically, you know, amongst the top five in the welterweight class. And they've been talking about fighting each other for almost a year, year and a half. They've, you know, sparred, you know, they sparred in the gym many times over. So both of them know, you know, their, what they do inside and outside of the ring. But, you know, I've been looking forward to this fight for almost a year now. So once it finally happens, then that's when I'll, you know, basically get up for the fight. But until it really happens, then there really isn't that much that can be said unless either one of them backs out.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, like I said, don't need no more build-up. Let's just fight, you know. And like we say time and time again on this show, for Thurman to fight a B-level fighter along the line of Collazo, no. You can't do that, man. How do you go from calling out Mayweather over and over and over, and now Mayweather's, any speculation out, Mayweather is officially out of the game. So how do you want to go from fighting Mayweather? Mayweather's gone. So now you want to fight a B-level fighter? No, it don't work like that, bro. And you want to be on the best? You want to be the best of the division? You want to be in the pound for pound list? No, it don't. Take the Porter fight. Take the fight. If you can fight Mayweather, you can damn sure fight Porter. And from all what we see, Porter does want this fight. You know, it's a Thurman camp that's half stepping. You know.
Yep. And that's the thing about it is that Porter's been, you know, sitting there waiting to fight somebody, you know what I'm saying? And they want the fight against Thurman, and always have, but it seems like they don't necessarily want to do something like that. You know what I mean? So it seems like Thurman just wants to, you know, sit there in the back. He wants to talk a lot, but he doesn't want to fight anybody, or at least fight anybody of note. So, to me, like I said, with this one, it's like I have to, you know, believe it when I see it. Because, you know, over the past few, you know, over the past year and a half, I mean, you've seen Porter, you know, fight the likes of Broner. He's fought, you know, Kell Brook. He's fought even Pauly Malignaggi, you know, in order to give the first title belt that he got in the welterweight class. So, I mean, you compare that to who Keith Thurman's fought over the past year and a half. I mean, it's not even close.
What's funny, you got a guy like Errol Spence, who's not only hungry, but ready for these top fights. And you got a guy like Thurman that's been around and is up here half-stepping. And it's just so crazy how boxing is, man. Like I said, Spence is ready to fight and can fight and beat the majority of these people in the top 10 in the class. But Thurman, like, it's a shame. It's a shame, man.
Yeah, this is bad. This is real bad in that instance, man. Real bad. So, like I said, I mean, it's, you know, over 2 months away. So, you know, we'll be seeing what the updates are going to be in that case for that type of fight. And then when it comes along, we'll be able to talk more about it. You know, but until then, you know, it's basically a wait-and-see approach. You know what I mean? But, yeah, on that note, pretty much going to close it out for this week. We're going to get back into it next week as we're going to review that fight between Timothy Bradley and Brandon Rios. And I'll also look forward to, you know, the other fights that are coming up closer and see if we get any updates in reference to that. So is there anything you wanted to close out with, Terrell?
Yeah, my last point I'm making is the fact that Antonio Margarito wants to make a comeback into boxing. And my first thought was like, why? And already Cole is making a statement in regards to him, like, you never proved that you didn't cheat. But it's just so funny how these guys be gone for a while. And I know Margarito had a severe eye injury that took him out. But it's just funny to see him trying to come back. And I think Anna's trying to give him a small level fight for right now. And Margarito's saying that he's ready for the big time right now. Like, man, you've been gone for 4 years. How you want a big time fight? You know? So that's just funny to see that. But that's my last comment, though. Rachel, as always.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. That's another newsworthy thing was Margarito was planning to, you know, come back into the sport. For me, it would be kind of surprising to see if any sanctioning body would be able to allow Antonio Margarito to fight. I mean, when you're basically caught with hand wraps, whether it's through the Nevada State Athletic Commission or any type of commission, you shouldn't be able to fight anywhere. Because there's always that possibility that you may try to do it again. So I think that something like that should be a lifetime ban offense or, you know, a lifetime ban for punishment. But I guess, you know, these sanctioning bodies are able to, you know, let this guy fight again. And I think that I've read that Margarito has gone through a pretty costly divorce recently. So maybe that's, you know, part of his motivation to return to the ring to see if he can get something back over the next series of fights, you know, two or three fights or so. But like I said, number one, it's going to be kind of hard to see if there's any athletic commission that will be able to allow him to fight. And then number two, it'll be really interesting to see if there's any fighters out there in the sport that would, you know, be able to step up to fight him. So I don't know how that's going to turn out. So on that note, we're going to close out the show. Be sure to catch us next week, same time, Sunday night, 7:30 p.m. on the MRN Broadcasting Channel, Blog Talk Radio. And we do have our sister shows here on Tuesday nights. We have the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, Tuesdays at 8:30 p.m. with the Executioner, Matthew Long, and the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show on Wednesday nights at 8:30 with Kelly Mike Shottown, Carson Mathis, and other guests that call in. So be sure to catch those two shows. Like I say, after every show, reporting boxing, it's a hit, not to hit, not to say the trade. And on that note, folks, I'm gone. Have a good evening.